Welcome to the Animal Voices radio show here on 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, May the 8th, 2015, and today is our Mother's Day show where we honor all mothers. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our guest co-host, Farah Nazarali. Welcome.
Thank you.
And our control room operator, Amir Ali.
Good afternoon.
Cynthia, Alyssa, and Jackie are all away today. Welcome, you two. So glad to have you here. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio program dedicated to animal advocacy and compassionate living, broadcasting live every Friday from noon till 1 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and bringing you interviews, commentary, news, and events that you need to keep up to date on what's happening both locally and abroad. In addition to our live broadcast here on 100.5 FM and at coopradio.org, our shows are also available as podcasts on iTunes and at animalvoices.org. After airing. For our first interview today, we will bring to you Alyssa Hamilton, who is an author based in Toronto and has just written a book entitled Got Milk, in which she investigates and critiques the misinformation spread by the dairy industry. And of course, this industry is the one that tells us that we need to drink the milk of another species in our adulthood in order to build strong bones and get our essential nutrients. I'm happy to be able to give Alyssa a platform today to share the findings from her heavily researched book with us, and she'll also tell us why she thinks we don't need to drink cow's milk and why it should be removed from the Canada Food Guide as its own category. We're also doing a giveaway of 3 copies of this book, so if you want to win, there is still a chance to do so during this show. If you're listening live, all you have to do is send us a quick email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com before the end of the show. That is before 12:55 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. And just tell us what your favorite non-dairy milk is, or if you don't have one, because maybe you haven't tried one yet, which one you'd like to try. And we'll be doing a draw for the winners after the show, and we'll mail the book to you if you win. And you can just put in the subject title contest entry. And for our feature segment, I am so pleased to bring to you a wonderful interview that I did with Pam Ahern last week. She is the founder and director of Edgar's Mission Farm Sanctuary in Victoria, Australia. And if you're connected to social media, then chances are that you've seen some of the viral videos created by Edgar's Mission that showcase some of their animal ambassadors and share their stories to spread a compassion for an understanding of animals worldwide. Now, when I was doing the Skype interview with Pam, I must say that I was a little distracted, as while she was there talking to me, she was also holding the most adorable little newborn lamb who had just come into her care the day before, and his name is Lemonade. And he was wearing a pink sweater. I posted a photo of them on our Facebook page yesterday if you want to see that at Animal Voices Vancouver. And you can also see an exclusive video of the interview where she tells Lemonade's story on our Facebook page tomorrow. So please do look out for that. And today we'll be hearing stories about some of the other animals at Edgar's Mission, including a few touching stories that she'll share about the mother-child bond between two of the cows at the sanctuary and their calves. That interview is coming up in about 32 minutes, so please do stay tuned.
Speaking of cows and the bond that mothers have with their calves, mother cows have with their calves, you know, one of the things that was so refreshing for my birthday that I got to do was to have a vegan cheese party.
And you did? Tell us about it.
Oh, it was so much fun. And, yeah. You know, I think it's something that we haven't seen yet come into the commercial marketplace in terms of vegan artisanal cheeses. But I think in a couple years, we'll see a lot better selection of cheeses that will be available. And it's so nice to be able to engage, to eat something delicious and healthy that does not cause harm to other living beings. And certainly it was such a revelation for me, because the cheese addiction was the hardest part of me going from being vegetarian to vegan.
I think that's the biggest roadblock for many people is they say, I could never go vegan because I can't give up cheese. I mean, did you have that experience in the year? I don't think you did you?
No, not yeah. really. The okay, only thing so, dairy-wise yeah. that I really liked were like chocolate bars and stuff like that. But
the hidden dairy, for yeah. sure. And it really does, it takes an, you know, it's an acquired taste to get that taste for dark chocolate, which that's I never true. Used to love before. But mm-hmm. the thing is about dairy, it's got those addictive casomorphines in them, and that's mm-hmm. why it's an addictive substance. And that's why people say I could never give up cheese. But for me, I was one of those people. I thought I could never. I used to eat. I remember I used to always have a block of cow's cheese in my fridge, and I always had to have at least one piece a day. Like that was it's so weird thinking of that. Like that was a dependency. If yeah, you think absolutely. About it, yeah.
And I don't feel I have the same obsession or addiction or compulsion to vegan cheeses. I just really enjoy their flavor. They're yeah. very, very rich, and I really like them, but I don't have that compulsion.
Speaking of compulsions, I've had a compulsion to be making my own vegan cheeses lately because ever since you announced this cheese party that we had last weekend on your birthday, we knew about it for months, and I said, well, I'm going to make something because I was into totally making into vegan cheeses a few years ago, I guess, when Miyoko Shinner's book, Artisan Vegan Cheese, came out. That's an amazing book, by the way.
Incredible book.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm back into it now. I always got my cashews soaking, and I'm making a mozzarella that's culturing, and mm-hmm. I haven't made that one before. And for the party, I redid a brie cheese that I had done before because I know that one's a winner, and it's got coconut oil in it. It's just got a really good taste to it. And mm-hmm. Amir, did you have some of that air-dried Gouda that I made for a meeting? A couple weeks
I did
ago.
Actually, it was yeah. really good. Yeah,
yeah. So, so I am on the cheese making kick. It's a lot of fun, but like you said, like it's not like I'm addicted to it. It just tastes really good.
Yeah,
you know?
It's a very rich flavor. It's so wonderful to eat. The texture is great, and the nice thing, the thing about the cheeses is it can be a little bit labor intensive, which is why I think it'll be great to see when we have more people making them and selling them, so that people can buy them in a grocery store or supermarket.
I actually disagree with that because all you have to do is soak the nuts and blend it and then wait. So it's
yes.
pretty easy.
There are some yeah. easy ones, but there are also yeah. some ones that require yeah. like drying time, and the humidity yeah. of the ambient, the air yeah. is important. So
yeah, the thing about it is you never, like, depending on how hot it is in your place or what kind of a place you have to culture your cheese, you never know. I like stinky cheese, by the way. Last night I had made a cheddar and chive cheese, and I was waiting. I made it quite a while ago, so it like a couple weeks ago for my friend, and we hadn't had a chance to eat it. So I had made dinner from last night. I'm like, yeah, I'm bringing out the cheese, the stinky cheese from. And well, it's actually pretty stinky. And I'm like, I hope you like really strong tasting cheese. And he really liked it. I really like that really like
sharp flavor.
I really appreciate that. Yeah. So that
Me
was
too.
That was a winner as well, for sure. Yeah. So but moving on to you know, the issues with cheese and dairy, of course, there's the reason that we don't consume those products is because there's a lot of harm in it. Not only is you know, dairy is a product of a lot of misery and a lot of harm for mother cows and their baby calves. Of course, a lot of people don't realize that mother cows need to be constantly impregnated in order to produce milk, which produces the volumes and volumes of milk and cheese that our society wants to consume all the time. And that's why we're speaking about that for Mother's Day, because there's all those babies, if you can imagine, that are torn away from their mothers. And there's a huge natural bond. And from what I've read, mother cows have are extremely bonded to their children. But they're ironically the ones that they never get to spend time with their babies. They're taken from them the first day. They're not even allowed to wean. And it's really sad. Liberation BC, which is a local group in Vancouver, has created a campaign to bring attention to the plight of the mother cows every year called the Cow Ribbon Campaign. And we've actually have featured, I think, maybe a couple of interviews about this campaign on the show before. So if you want to check that out, the most recent one was in 2013 with Mary Chris Staples of Liberation BC. You can check that out on our website. Just look up Cow Ribbon at animalvoices.org. But what a cow ribbon is you know those ribbons that people wear for like AIDS awareness or breast cancer cancer awareness. Mm-hmm. Well, they disperse these ribbons that have a pattern of dairy cow spots, like the Holstein cow.
The black and white.
Yeah, the black and white. And I'm telling you, like, it's an attention grabber. It's a conversation starter. When I wear mine, I'm like at the store. I've had like the cashier at the checkout go, "Oh, what's that for?" Because everyone recognizes that symbol of the ribbon. Like, they know that that represents a cause, and people want to know what is that cause. And I say it's to honor all mothers, including dairy cows, and that just plants a seed in people's minds, I think, and it just. They go, oh.
And to make the connection that cows are a feminine species.
Yeah.
And we can all honor that.
Yeah, especially for this Mother's Day. So if you see people wearing that ribbon, you'll know what it's for. You can get your own. Just go to cowribbon.com to find out all about it.
And there's so many events that are happening in the next couple days, one of which is happening on Saturday, May 9th, which is tomorrow from 3 to 5. It's an open meeting about healthier communities and radical self-care. It's going to be at Spartacus Books, which is 3378 Finley Street. And the questions that are going to be discussed are, what does it mean to nurture ourselves and practice activism that is truly sustainable? How can we work together to build and foster healthier communities? This will be led by local activist Alyssa Ray, an Animal Voice host.
Who's Alyssa
also.
Ray? We know Alyssa very well.
Yeah, and she'll be facilitating an engaging and interactive workshop and discussion around this. And then, of course, Sunday is Mother's Day, and this is a wonderful opportunity to practice mothers to honor the feminine in all species. There will be a Mother's Day dairy outreach happening at the Vancouver City Center SkyTrain station, which is Georgia and Granville. That's from 1 to 3, and it's Liberation BC who will be celebrating all mothers. They'll be educating the public about the dairy industry with leaflet signs and speakouts, and all materials will be provided, so you just have to come and show up. And I think that'll be a really wonderful way to honor...
If you want to speak out for the mother cows, that's a great opportunity to do it. And hopefully there's something happening in your city as well, or you can start something like that.
Mm-hmm. And then, of course, there's the Cloverdale Cruelty Rodeo protest. Ooh, I just hate even the sound of it, that we still live in a world that does that. But that's happening from May 15th to May 18th, starting on Friday the 15th at 6:30 and Saturday all the way to Monday at 1:30, an hour before the event, and lasting for around 3 hours. There's a group of people who will be protesting the cruelty of the so-called rodeo.
That's being coordinated by our host, Jackie, actually. So good for her for taking the time to do that. It's a major effort for the animals.
Yeah, and I think it's so important. You know, I was walking by a protest outside of Dairy Queen the other day, and I heard a little girl as she was passing by that she was saying to her mom, "I wish all animals were free." And, you know, even if parents don't get it, their kids might. And I think that's really important for planting a seed for the next generation. On Saturday, May 16th at 3 to 4 p.m., there will be the Chicken Vigil. And that will be at the Hallmark Slaughterhouse at Commercial and Hastings. Again, it's Liberation BC who is inviting all of you to bear witness and show love and empathy to the thousands of chickens who are killed every day at the slaughterhouse. Signs are provided, but you can also make your own.
And May is International Respect for Chickens Month, so I think that's especially important that we honor the chickens during this month, for sure.
And then there's a field trip. For those of you in Vancouver who'd like to go to the island, there will be a protest of the festival Bacon Lusa.
Oh, it sounds terrible.
It does sound terrible. Bacon. Anyways, Saturday, May 23rd, all day. People are coordinating going over together from Vancouver. And it's with the Victoria activist, the Critical Cat. And they're protesting this bacon festival where 2,200 pounds of bacon will be served to the attendees. And, of course, this is not just a food. It is a food that comes from the killing of the pigs. So this is a way that we can show our solidarity for pigs as our friends and as co-species on this planet.
Thank you so much for that, Farah. You are listening to the Animal Voices show on 100.5 FM CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. For our first interview today, we have author Alyssa Hamilton on the show. Alyssa has a PhD in environmental studies from Yale University and is an authority on food processing and marketing issues, having written for major publications and academic journals. She has spoken at TEDx Cambridge, has been a guest on the Dr. Oz show, ABC World News with Diane Sawyer, and CBC TV's Marketplace. Alyssa's new book, called Got Milked, is a critique of the dairy industry and dispels common misconceptions about dairy milk. It looks behind the marketing and examines the enormous influence the milk industry has over our diets. Alyssa is here today to share some of the findings in her new book. Hello, Alyssa, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
Hello, nice to be here.
Yes, well, thank you for coming on the show today to speak about your new book, Got Milked, which is subtitled What You Don't Know About Dairy, The Truth About Calcium, and While You'll Thrive Without Milk. I'm interested in knowing your responses to these offerings, but first, let's start with some of the history on the origins of the dairy industry. In your book, you say that bovine milk isn't and never has been a staple of most cultures. How did we start drinking the milk of another species to the point where it's grown into this big industry today that forces it upon us as a necessary part of the human diet?
The history is pretty interesting. I write in the first chapter about how milk is America's first fast food. It really began when we moved from farm to the city and women started working, and so cow's milk became a convenient substitute for breast milk. It's kind of like the beginning of going for takeout rather than homemade. Of course, then along came pasteurization technology, which made the wide-scale availability of milk possible. Milk is an ideal breeding ground for bacteria, so it was dangerous to drink straight on a large scale. So this pasteurization technology allowed for that.
Well, approximately 65% of the human population has a reduced ability to digest lactose after infancy. Can you tell us about lactose intolerance and why you think we should take on the subject of lactase persistence instead?
Right. I really don't like the term lactose intolerance because it sounds like a disorder, like some kind of weakness. But in fact, it's those of us who can digest the lactose in milk as adults are abnormal. They are the descendants of dairy farmers, mostly small group of from Northern Europe. And what these Northern European farmers were born with a genetic mutation that enables them to produce lactase, which is the enzyme that breaks down lactose in milk. They were born with this mutation that enables them to produce it into adulthood, beyond the years when we really need it, which is when we're breastfeeding. So properly speaking, this minority of adults is lactase persistent, and everyone else is normal or lactase impersistent. And the distinction is significant considering government agencies and healthcare providers continually talk about lactose intolerance as if it's a disorder.
And I like how you say how it's interesting that you mentioned that it's a privileged position in the North American diet and that drinking milk is exclusionary. Can you tell us a bit more about what you mean by that?
Well, in fact, there was a doctor who testified before the Dietary Guidelines Advisory Committee in the U.S. We're due for every 5 years the dietary guidelines are revised, and so there are now hearings. And he actually has said that given the statistics at this point, 50 to 80% of Hispanics, 60 to 80% of African Americans and Ashkenazi Jews, and almost 100% of Asians and Native Americans can't digest the lactose in milk. So at this point, he says that to continue to push 3 servings per day of dairy on an entire population, most of whom can't digest it, is a form of government-sponsored institutionalized racism.
You know, I read an article this week where I think it was the Dairy Farmers of Canada, their position on lactose intolerance, their spokesperson was saying that, oh, we think that people who aren't able to digest lactose should still drink milk because it's got all of these essential nutrients and that they'll get used to it more. But really, I personally think that's crazy. And it's known that cow's milk gives people many inflammatory responses. So anyways.
Well, and there's no reason reason that if you're not feeling good drinking or eating it, there's no reason to push it on yourself. Even the dairy industry actually accepts the fact that nobody needs milk for all your essential nutrients. Their consistent response is milk is the most convenient and palatable source of calcium. But the sales show otherwise. Milk sales are plummeting. And in fact, I spoke to the director of the Office of School Nutrition for Detroit Public Schools. She said her kids are asking for water. They're not asking for milk. And yet, she only gets funding from the government to supply her kids milk and not funding for the water station she needs so that kids can have water when and where they need it. If you go into schools these days, the school cafeterias, the garbage bins are full of unopened cartons of milk. So it simply isn't true that we're loving our milk. And there's no reason to push it on everybody when, as I mentioned, we can get all those essential nutrients outside of the dairy food group. You know, we've created this hierarchy of foods with the dairy food group, with milk and calcium at the pinnacle. And yes, of course, milk is high in calcium, and we need calcium for healthy bone development, but we don't need it. There are many other essential nutrients that we also need. It's no more important than nutrients such as magnesium, vitamin K, vitamin D that don't get the same spotlight. We're told to get these other nutrients from a variety of foods and not so when it comes to calcium. The dairy food group is set up so that we get virtually all of our calcium from a single food, and that's dairy. And these recommendations are not evidence-based. Even out of the Harvard School of Public Health, Dr. Walter Willett has written a commentary about how our calcium recommendations are higher than anywhere else in the world. They're double or more that of the World Health Organization minimum, 500 milligrams per day. Ours reach up to 1,300 milligrams per day. And they're simply not evidence-based. His conclusion is to reduce our calcium recommendations and raise those for vitamin D.
So it sounds like there's just such a pervasive myth, marketing myth, that we need calcium and that the best source is from cow's milk. And obviously what you're saying shows the opposite. But
well, we do need calcium. Of course we need calcium. We definitely need calcium. I don't want to be misunderstood about that. But we don't. We certainly don't need to get it from cow's milk. And there is evidence now that our calcium recommendations may be too high. In fact, actually, in 2014, just recently, there was a study coming out, published in the British Medical Journal, that showed not only, you know, besides the fact that the majority of us can't digest it, there's increasing research questioning the virtues of milk, and this is one of many studies. It tracked over 100,000 men and women for 20 years, found that women who were the who drank the most milk, so 3 glasses or more per day, were at an increased risk for mortality due to diseases such as cancer and cardiovascular disease. But get this, also an increased at increased risk for bone fractures. So there is evidence that, you know, too much calcium may not be doing our bones good.
Mm-hmm. And that goes totally against what the whole marketing of the dairy industry has been. But, you know, you've been mentioning how there's a bias of the dairy industry in terms of its connection to schools and the funding that schools get for the drinks that they provide. What about in sports? Is there also a similar kind of bias?
Well, now that's the latest. They're pushing chocolate milk as the ideal recovery drink because it has, you know, the proper ratio of carbohydrates to protein. But what chocolate milk, these flavored milks are, is you're basically taking milk, a glass of milk, which has equivalent to 3 teaspoons of naturally occurring sugar, and then adding another 3 teaspoons of refined sugar, and you're getting the same amount of sugar that you would in soft drinks. So we've taken soft drinks out of schools, and yet we're promoting these flavored milks, essentially substituting sugar for sugar. And the government, you know, pushing milk through school programs, besides the fact that it's a little bit odd considering that allergies, milk is one of the most allergenic foods, and we all know most parents can't bring peanut butter to school because of that, how many kids are allergic to peanuts. Well, a lot of kids these days are allergic to milk as well, and yet we're still seeing funding to have milk in cafeterias. I actually heard an interview of one parent who has to have her daughter eat her lunch in a separate room because she's allergic to milk, and you know, all the kids are drinking milk through government-sponsored programs. The part of the problem is the government has a double mandate. So they're there to protect our health, but also to promote agricultural commodities, and those two interests conflict.
Yeah, I'd really like to talk more about that and just about the government's role in these institutional forces that dictate what people eat. Can you tell us more about how what our Canadian government's role is in continuing to feed Canadians the message that dairy is an essential part of the human diet? Where does that all come from?
Well, that's exactly, I mean, I think part of, I can't say for sure, but part of it, there is this double mandate. And it's simply not true that if you go to Health Canada's website, you see milk is an essential part of a healthy diet, and it simply isn't true. Nobody needs milk to be healthy. There are plenty. The definition of essential nutrient is a dietary substance that is required for healthy body functioning. Plenty of bodies function very well without milk, including Olympians such as former track star Carl Lewis. I mean, it's simply not true that it's an essential part of a healthy diet.
Yeah, I have a quote here that says, I think it's probably from your book, the government is more concerned about the health of the dairy industry than the health of the people.
I'm not sure where that quote comes from, but I can't say where their priorities lie, but it's important to, you know, what I think makes the most sense at this point, given that most of us can't digest the lactose in milk, given that this growing body of research questioning the virtues of milk. The sensible thing to do at this point, and I also just want to emphasize, things are different today than when the recommendations were first set. They're different in terms of our nutrition knowledge, they're different in terms of the diseases we're suffering, and they're different in terms of these demographics that I was talking about when it comes to the inability to digest lactose. So the sensible thing to do at this point is to move dairy foods that are high in protein, low in added sugars, to the protein group, which is how the dairy industry advertises dairy products these days anyways. And that way, it becomes an option, not a requirement. So I'm not talking about eliminating dairy from everybody's diet. If you eat, you know, dairy products, you enjoy them, you feel good eating them, fine. But if after reading the book you have some concerns about the studies that you read, or else you're lactose intolerant or sensitive or allergic, I've provides tons of recipes to show how easy it is to get all of the essential nutrients you need outside of the dairy food group. And so I just, again, to emphasize, I'm talking about making it an example of a food that you can eat rather than one that you must eat, which is how it reads now when we have this dairy food group telling us that all of us should be having 3 servings per day of dairy, or most of us, everyone older than 3.
Can you tell us about what the dairy industry's role is in creating, for example, the Canada Food Guide or setting dietary recommendations for the United States in that?
For that, you know, you'd have to talk to somebody who knows about how the committees, you know, who's on the committees, and I'm not going to point any fingers about how, you know, if they're revolving doors. That's for somebody else to comment on. I'm just bringing, what I really want to do is just bring balance to the messaging out there. We've all heard about the wonders of dairy and milk, and we haven't heard some of the downsides. And also, you know, it was funny. There was just a show quoting some expert talking about how she had never heard about calcium in basil leaves. And people just, even the nutrition experts, aren't aware of how many really healthy foods are out there that are high in calcium. 2 tablespoons of dried ground basil has over 200 milligrams of calcium, so almost the same amount of calcium as in a glass of milk. 3 ounces of sardines has more calcium than a glass of milk. So a lot of this information we just don't know about, and even in terms of the vegetables, broccoli, bok choy, kale, all have higher calcium absorption rates than the calcium in milk. And I think many of us tend to believe that milk is the most bioavailable source of calcium, and that's simply not true either. So my point in writing the book is both, as I mentioned, to restore balance to the messaging and also to inform people about how we can, how many really healthy foods there are that are high in these nutrients that we need. And we've all been told that we need to be eating more fruits and vegetables. Well, those are the foods that are high in these nutrients.
Well, finally, in order to stop the brainwashing of a society that has grown up since birth with the saturation of the pro-dairy message, what do you think needs to be done?
Well, at least, you know, you can start in your own home and work from there outside, you know, go beyond. I think if you try yourself, to see how, just to inform yourself about where you can get all of these nutrients, and so you understand, then I think inevitably, I hope I started the ball rolling for a conversation about, first of all, eliminating the dairy food group, and however that comes to be, whether it's grassroots, you know, one by one, people realize that we don't need it, or whether it's more direct advocacy, whether people, you know, write to Health Canada and voice their concerns. I'm leaving it now up to all of you out there to.
That's why we have you on the show today, right? At least to get the message out. Well, thank you, Alyssa Hamilton, for giving us a glimpse into the information you have shared in your new book called Got Milked, which critiques the messages of the dairy industry and explains why we don't need milk to survive and thrive. Thanks, and have a good day.
You too. My pleasure.
So I just wanted to announce again that we are giving away 3 copies of this book, and you can still apply to win a copy if you're listening to the show live. All you have to do is send us an email at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com and just put the subject title as contest entry and tell us what your favorite non-dairy milk is, or if you haven't tried one yet, which one you might want to try, and we'll be doing that draw at the end of the show.
My personal favorite non-dairy is hazelnut, chocolate hazelnut milk.
Awesome.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
We're back here at Animal Voices on Co-op Radio 100.5 FM. I'm Farah, and I have some news for you. We have some good news and maybe some not so good news. The good news is there is a private zoo in Alberta, Three Hills, Alberta, that just recently closed. It's the Guzu, and it's been a target of criticism for more than 20 years. Voice for Animals has said it's one of the worst zoos in Canada. It's apparently filthy and dilapidated, and there's only one lone baboon in there, and baboons are very, very social creatures, so it's a great thing that the zoo is closed, but the animals were sold to other private zoos in Quebec and Ontario, and so this is really unfortunate. You know, it would be so nice to see zoos close and those animals being given to sanctuaries.
Yeah, you know, I think the premise of this story when it was shared in other media was the zoo's closed, but for what? They're just going to other zoos. It's sad.
Yeah, it is very sad. I mean, I would love to see a society without any zoos at all. I think it would be so wonderful to have children and people visit and have interaction with animals in places like sanctuaries where you can see animals in a more natural environment and with others of their own species.
Yeah, and for people who are listening locally, who are regular listeners to the show, you might remember that we had a big protest of the Greater Vancouver Zoo about last month, I guess it was, and we had a lot of people there to protest that zoo, which is in Alder Grove. It's I think it's a pretty dismal place as well, and it's had many, many infractions. If you want to learn more about that and zoos in general, you can listen to an interview that we did with David Ibister. He was the the organizer of that protest, and he also has a wealth of knowledge about zoos, and you can check out our website, animalvoices.org, to find out more about that. And I just have one quick story here. Interesting. This comes from India. An animal rights group found a hungry stray dog, but instead of taking him or her so they can rescue him or her, the group strapped a GoPro camera on his head. However, the group argues that it has a pretty good reason for doing so, and this group is based in Mumbai, and they say that they did so to bring light to a day in the life of a dog in the streets between eating out of dumpsters, drinking from puddles, and getting slapped in the face by strangers, which is sad but true, I think. The footage shows the cruelty dogs like this one go through every day. So what do you think about that? Is that good? Is that bad? They didn't help the dog, but they strapped a GoPro camera to his head.
You know, on the one hand, I think sometimes it's important to have visual portrayal of events that we have no way of understanding. And in that way, I think it's good. But my concern is what happens after those videos or that footage is collected. You know, will the dog then somehow be taken care of, and what happens after?
Yeah, and I just want to say, too, like, we've both been to India. There is a lot of stray animals. There is a lot of stray dogs. And yeah. The situation is so huge. We visited one animal sanctuary called Animal Aid, who we've had on the show before, and their mandate was not to save all the dogs and not make them strays, but to rescue the ones that needed help, the ones that had bad infections or mange or were hit by cars, and they would rehabilitate them, and then they send them back out on the streets because that's where they live.
Mm-hmm.
For our feature interview today, we are speaking with Pam Ahern, who is the founder and director of Edgar's Mission. Edgar's Mission is a not-for-profit farm sanctuary in Victoria, Australia, that seeks to create a humane and just world for humans and non-humans. They currently provide lifelong love and care to over 300 rescued animals, ranging from cows to sheep to chickens to goats. For our Mother's Day show today, Pam is here to share with us some stories about mother cows, as well as to tell us the stories of some of the other rescued animals at the sanctuary. Hello, Pam, and welcome to the Animal Voices show.
It's great to be with you all the way from Australia. Hello.
Well, yes, thank you so much for coming on the show today to speak with us about the animals at Edgar's Mission. And I know you must be so busy every day with taking care of so many animals, and I really appreciate this time. I've learned about Edgar's Mission over the past year from all of the amazing social media work that you do at the sanctuary to convey your messages all around the world, to even here in Vancouver, Canada. And it's just lovely to know that wonderful havens for animals like yours exist so far across the world from us. So to start, can you please tell us briefly about Edgar's Mission, how you started, when you started, and why you started rescuing farmed animals?
Well, for as long as I can remember, I have always loved animals. I was born in the city part of Melbourne in Australia. We had cats and dogs, and I was fascinated by the natural world. I grew up caring for them. I became a foster carer, involved with cat and dog rescue, helped a lot with wildlife. There was always a bit of a black spot in my world, and it came about, I actually went to a anti-fur rally one day, and people were talking about Peter Singer's book, Animal Liberation. And so I got the book, I started reading it. It was just the chapter that he was talking about. He went to the RSPCA in England, and some friends took him there thinking that they had this mutual love of animals, which they did. Talking about animals bettering their world, came time for afternoon tea, they served ham sandwiches. And Peter Singer thought, how odd, and I thought, how right. So that was when my life and my menu changed forever. But it was in 2003 that it took off on a course that I could never have imagined, and that was when I rescued a pig. So it really did start with a pig. In 2003, Edgar Allan Pig came into my world, and he changed everything. I gave up my job, my equestrian career, my partner, ever having a normal life to rescue farm animals, because it really brought home to me how much forgotten they are from our thoughts, our animal protection legislation, and even their care. There are no places, there were no places in Australia for farm animals to go when they were unwanted or abandoned. So we created this haven for animals like Edgar, where we were their voice. We would rescue as many as we could, and my pledge to those that we couldn't save is that we would be your voice.
Well, I know you do have some fantastic stories to share about your beautiful residence at Edgar's Mission, and I would love you to share some of those stories with us. So I think the first time I heard of an animal at Edgar's Mission was when I came across an amazing video online of a chicken named Little Miss Sunshine, and I was so amazed to see how smart she was by our own human standards. We just don't expect that as human beings. May is International Respect for Chickens Month. Could you tell us Little Miss Sunshine's story of how she came to be rescued and about the video you made showing her true bird brain intelligence?
Little Miss Sunshine is a real trailblazer, and even her story coming to the sanctuary, it gives me great heart that we can make the world a better place. It's easy for us as consumers to go to the supermarket and buy something different from the shelf, but Little Miss Sunshine actually came from a Battery Hen Farm, which most of your listeners will probably know, those terrible places where hens are incarcerated. And the farmer actually had a change of heart. He was walking through the shed one day, and he just stopped and looked at his chickens, and he thought, this is incredibly cruel. How can I do this to these animals? So he actually decided he wanted to exit the industry. He was going to actually find another way to feed his family, but he didn't want his hens sent to slaughter. So we contacted Edgar's Mission to see if we could assist. We said we could. We had no idea how daunting the task would be. Several thousand hens were involved in this rescue, and one by one we lifted every one of those gentle hens from the cage, and we told them they're safe now. They'll go into Edgar's Mission. Little Miss Sunshine was in their number. She was actually one of the hens that was actually going to be rehomed, but when she was on the way there, she actually was a little bit unwell. So she came back to the sanctuary, and Paula, who works at the sanctuary, fell in love with Little Miss Sunshine. Her name came about because it was the first time in her life that she actually got to feel the sunshine on her back, to stretch her wings, to lay her eggs in private, to move away from those she didn't like, to hang with those that she did. For a hen, they are the most fundamentally important things in their world, and they are denied to around 12 million chickens here in Australia. They never get to do those things. Now she does, and she's an ambassador for chickens, and she really does smash the myth of what bird brain means. When you see these animals that are incredibly intelligent and that have this emotional world, because she's a real character, she knows her name, and when you see her doing these little tricks that she can do, it really does make you think, wow, this wasn't a chicken that was actually bred to do these things. This was a chicken that sat for 12 or 18 months in a cage, just doing the same thing day in, day out in this impoverished world, that now is doing these things that showing cognitive ability that three-year-olds don't even have. It's just amazing, the potential of these chickens. And it's so important that people actually get to see what these animals are like and realize that their choices impact so badly on these animals.
Well, two other stories that have captured my heart at Edgar's Mission are the stories of Leon Trotsky and Frosty the Snow Goat. Can you start by telling us who is Leon Trotsky and how did he come to the sanctuary?
Leon Trotsky is a pig with a wicked, wicked sense of humour. He's a really, really quirky guy. Again, I had no idea Leon would end up the incredible ambassador he's become. He was born on a free-range pig farm. His mother had an injury and she accidentally fell on Leon and two of his siblings. Sadly, they were crushed and they died. Leon suffered horrific injuries to his pelvis on one side and his hock on the other. They were both shattered, so he couldn't get about. He was dragging himself about. He was only a few days old. A neighbour heard about his plight and was so taken by poor little Leon and trying to struggle that she took him and tried to save him, realising that he was way beyond what she could do. She contacted Edgar's Mission. So he came to us, and just this little creature's plucky resolve to live. You see it in humans, and every day we see it here in animals, this determination to live and beat the odds. It was an incredible challenge because, as I said, he couldn't walk with his back legs, so we actually had to get him a little cart to get around him. He scooted around his little cart. We actually had to chase him around the farm. It was a bit like Jack Brabham chasing around with his – he was so fast. He wanted to live and explore his world. And being young, it was a really good prognosis that the soft bones actually mended. They mended very well. And now he is an ambassador for animals. Actually, he was our Be Kind to Animals Week ambassador here in Australia last year. He travelled around the country showing everyone what an amazing animal he was. They were a bit surprised when we said we were turning up with Leon Trotsky, the ambassador for Be Kind to Animals Week, and it was a little pig. He stole so many hearts and changed so many minds about farm animals.
Is he still that little? Because that story was from a year ago, I noticed, and I'm curious, is he still such a – he can't be a little piglet anymore.
No, he's actually going to be a really, really big pig. When people see him today, they go, wow, he's grown. He's going to grow a lot more. He's a Wessex saddleback pig, and they are quite large pigs, but they're also known for their incredibly friendly and personable nature. So now he's about 80 kilos, but he's going to be a lot more than that. He'll end up several hundred kilos.
Okay, and I want to know more about Frosty the snow goat, because he had a similar issue as Leon Trotsky, and he has totally captured my heart as well. Such a sweet little boy. Can you tell us about Frosty the snow goat?
Frosty touched so many hearts around the world with his determination to survive. He actually wasn't broken bones like Leon. He actually suffered a terrible condition, joint navel ill, where a bacteria passed through his navel and affected his joints, and he couldn't, again, move behind. He came not long after Leon Trotsky, and Leon Trotsky very kindly lent his cart to Frosty to get about in, and Frosty, he certainly did. He got about all over the world. His story was just picked up by so many news services. And, again, it's just really people do identify and empathize with animals when given the chance. Frosty would have passed from this world unnoticed, but someone actually saw his plight and they wanted to do something about it. This is the tragedy, I think, for so many farm animals, that they suffer in silence. We don't get to see the terrible lives that we impose upon them. But when people do get to see them, just like that farmer had a change of heart when he didn't want to cause pain and suffering to these animals, he stopped doing what he was doing. I think this is a great message that Edgar's mission brings to the world, and how social media has helped us as well, that we can actually share these stories with people around the globe. Sadly, Frosty did pass away.
Aww.
Which broke the hearts of everybody. But he didn't take long in this world to get his message out there of kindness, and just one person can make a difference in the lives of so many. We had tributes flowing in around the world. It certainly eased our sorrow here at Edgar's Mission, but he lives on in the hearts and minds of everyone who knew him.
Well, Mother's Day is coming up this weekend, and I'm sure you've seen the mother-child bond many times at the sanctuary. I was really touched to learn about the story of Clarabelle the mother cow earlier this year and her baby Valentine. Can you please tell us about that?
Clarabelle came to the sanctuary along with another cow, Daphne. They were both what they call spent or ex-dairy cows. They were no longer productive in the dairy industry, and they were actually going to be sent to slaughter. When they came, they had these big S's marked on their udder, which identified them in the herd to be sent to slaughter. They got to live at the sanctuary here, but they also were pregnant. And an incredible thing was going to happen to these girls, that they're actually going to get to keep their babies. No one was ever, ever going to take their babies away. Daphne had her baby born on Australia Day. We called him Ozzy. And Clarabelle wasn't due to calf for several weeks later. But we noticed Clarabelle's behaviour started to change a little. She was always first for feeding every morning. But she was late a couple of days. And then we watched her, and she actually kept looking behind the paddock, behind her. And then we noticed she had one of her teats was really big and engorged. And we started looking around the paddock. We searched and we searched, and we actually found her baby. She'd stashed him in the forest. And when we found the baby, it wasn't a newborn. The umbilical cord was quite dry. And when the little calves are born, they actually have these pads on the sole of their feet. When they start walking around, they wear those pads away. They'd been gone for several days. So this calf was about 4 or 5 days old. Clarabelle had actually stashed the baby away so no one would take it away from her. And then she would move it every day. When we would find the baby calf, she would move the calf to a different position in the paddock. It took a couple of weeks before she realized that we were never, ever going to take that baby away. And it's just wonderful that these two beautiful cows will get to keep their babies and no one will ever take them away. And a lot of people don't realize that cows don't produce milk just by virtue of being a cow. We've really been hoodwinked by the dairy industry to believe that. I used to think that cows produce milk. Us females, we're not producing milk, but if we're going to have a baby, our body would prepare itself for that and we'll start to lactate for our babies. So the dairy industry exploits that, and they take the babies away soon after birth. It can't take away that bond between mother and calf.
Yeah, it's such a powerful story, and I think that stories like that really grasp people, because you're right, people don't even realize, for one thing, that you can't produce milk without all these babies that are discarded by the industry. I know you have a similar story about Pixie and Dixie. Can you please tell us about that?
Oh, Pixie and Dixie, yes. The little Pixie was a tiny, tiny young little heifer calf that found herself in a pound. When we rescued her, the pound people were very concerned because they felt that she'd actually been impregnated way, way too young, and we thought we may even have to have a cesarean performed on her because she was too small and they didn't think that she'd be able to give birth naturally. But Pixie, very determinedly, she did give birth. We did have to help her. We had the vet out, and it was quite a difficult birth, but she gave birth to a little baby, Dixie, who she was very, very protective of, and they've grown up now, and they're actually Dixie's bigger than Pixie. Beautiful, and she's never going to have to worry about him being impregnated or anyone taking her little baby away.
Well, I noticed that you have a special Mother's Day event happening at Edgar's Mission. Can you tell us what will be happening there?
We're actually going to be paying tribute to mothers in all their furred, feathered and wooled glory. We have several mothers that are here at Edgar's Mission. We do have a strict no breeding policy at the sanctuary. We love animals, we love baby animals, but there are so many animals out there that need rescue. We certainly don't breed anymore. But if the animals come to us and they're pregnant, they have their babies, and the babies actually get to live out their life with their mummies, which is something that so rarely happens at the sanctuary. So we'll be looking at quite a few of our mother-baby bonds. We'll have Clarabelle and Daphne with their babies, and we'll have a lovely little sheep, Bridget Bardot, who came to us with a horrifically broken leg. She has a little baby called Miracle, who was born. We actually have a wonderful little chicken, Missy Higgins, who was actually rescued from a cockfighting ring, and she was confiscated by the animal control officers, and she had little chicks with her at the time, which actually would have been raised and gone on to a cockfighting ring. So they're at the sanctuary, so we'll be paying tribute to all of them, and of course human mothers as well.
Well, that sounds just wonderful. So as I mentioned before, I came to learn about Edgar's Mission via your compelling and inspiring videos that are shared through your social media. The power of social media has definitely succeeded in getting your messages out there. And I know that one of your goals is to promote compassion, understanding, and respect for all animals. Can you speak about this message a bit more and how it ties into the work you do at Edgar's Mission?
People often say to me, how do you keep going when there's so much tragedy and you see so much heartache with the animals? And it comes back to that simple belief of the goodness of the human heart and just promoting kindness. We really focus on positive stories of hope that things can get better, no matter how much black and darkness we see in the world, that one person can make a difference. Each and every animal here at the sanctuary is alive today because someone made a difference. Someone made a call, someone brought an animal to us, someone did something. And it really is a message of hope that, you know, that lives can be saved. And it's resonating something that people will identify with. And this is encapsulated in our quote, that if we can live happy and healthy lives without harming others, why wouldn't we? And that's something we want everyone to think about. And it goes beyond animal rights issues. It goes beyond human rights issues. It even goes beyond environmental issues. It really, your answer to that question really defines who you are as human beings, that living happy and healthy lives without harming others. And it's all founded on the principle of kindness.
Thank you so much for that message, Pam. Finally, what can people do to help support the animals at Edgar's Mission from anywhere in the world?
There's so many things. This is a great thing about the internet and social media, that we can share the stories and it can touch people's hearts on so many levels just by changing the things that you do in your world, about thinking about animals and thinking about how your choices impose upon little animals like Lemonade, who would have perished had he not been rescued. So we can change the things that we eat, the foods that we wear. We can certainly donate money if you're in a position to donate money, so we can carry on our life-saving and life-changing work. You can share our videos and stories with your family and friends. It's amazing, actually. Just we put Lemonade's little video up last night, and messages were coming around from around the world that, you know, we're getting love from Canada and Germany and all around the world, that people actually care when they see this little lammy and they're sharing it with their family and friends. And like, he's already an ambassador. He hasn't been with us 24 hours and he's already an ambassador for animals.
Well, that's just, again, the work you do is just amazing. Thank you so much for taking this time to come on the show today to speak with us about some of these rescue stories and the animals at Edgar's Mission Sanctuary in Australia. and to share your stories for Mother's Day as well. To find out more about Edgar's Mission, you can find them online at edgarsmission.org.au. You have a wonderful website, by the way, and also on Facebook and YouTube as well. Thank you so much, Pam, and thanks so much for the work you do.
And thank you for all the work you do for animals as well.
You have been listening to Animal Voices on 100.5 FM CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our show next Friday, May 15th. It's a surprise. That's why you should join us. I'm curious to see. It's Tim's first show that he's producing, so we'll be curious to see what he has in store for us. So it's now time to do the draw for three lucky winners to win the book called Got Milked by Alyssa Hamilton. We had Alyssa on the show earlier today to speak about the deceptions of the dairy industry. And we have some people who have entered our draw, including even during the show. And I've got all the entries here in a cup. I'm going to get you to pull them out, Farah, and maybe you can read them.
The drum roll.
So please. The first winner is Mary Finelli. Congratulations, excellent. Mary.
From Fish Fields.
And then we have another winner here, and the name is Jean Herbert. Jean Hebert. Jean Hebert, congratulations. And the third book goes to Sinead Sanders.
Excellent. Sinead is a wonderful guitarist. That's so good. And I know she listens to the show a lot as well. So that's fantastic. We'll be contacting all of you. I know those were all Facebook entries, so I'll contact you on Facebook and get your addresses from you, and we'll send those books out. So we here at Animal Voices, we like to connect with you online. Go onto our website, animalvoices.org. You can stream shows from our archive there, or you can download them as podcasts. You can read our show blog there with detailed links. And you can also subscribe to us via iTunes. Just look for Animal Voices Vancouver and learn about our upcoming events and what we have going on as well. So stay in touch with us also on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. If you are curious in learning some of the stories of the animals that we featured on today's show from Edgar's Mission, I have posted all of their videos on our Facebook page this week. So you can check those out on there, Animal Voices Vancouver. And please do send us your suggestions and comments about the show either on Facebook or at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're closing the show today with a song by Jonathan Mann called The Truth About Dairy Cows. Stay tuned for Radio Eco Shock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.
I used to think if I didn't eat meat that I was doing my part. I couldn't give up cheese and dairy, and I didn't see why I should start. After all, cows always give milk to be enjoyed by me and you. I never stop to question whether or not that is true. But now I know that dairy cows get pregnant just about their entire lives, artificially inseminated, move away lonely wives,
giving birth every year, baby cows just taken away, and that's how you get your cheese each and every day.
Cows, cows, they're just mothers without the children.
Share their mama's fate, they too will be dairy cows, pumped full of hormones, starting at the age of one. They normally live to 25, but 5 years of this and they're done.
Cows, cows, they're just mothers without the children.
They got no milk to give, so in the eyes of this system, well, they got no right to live. They are just a thing left over, wasted life into a meal.
when they end up on a dinner plate. Cause someone ordered veal.
Cows, cows, they're just mothers without their children. Cows, cows, they are crying out to find them.
We stabbed our broker, Tamper, please. Kept stabbing her ass, beat her. Next day, Gary said, we're going to send her beef because she had mastitis on her. Couldn't get her in the parlor. We beat the fuck. I mean, I drunk that cow in the barn, baby, and I beat that fucker till her face was like this bigger.